It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Good morning. It's Championship Monday. Mike DeCourcy will be joining us. Second segment, we talk all about UConn and Michigan. Two games in the Final Four. Those were the winners. UConn beating Illinois comfortably. And then Michigan beating the heck out of Arizona. Now, I had Arizona as the champion all the way through. Not surprised they lost to Michigan. Shocked by the way they lost to Michigan. We'll find out if Solo Ball can play for UConn, if Yaxel Lindeberg can play for Michigan. This is going to be a lot of fun. That game is tonight. The Grizzlies lose. No big surprise there. 13 players were out. That's just astonishing. You know, it used to be that a college basketball team had only 13 players on their roster. You were allowed 13 guys to give scholarships to. Could you imagine if that happened to a college team? You'd have nobody to play. You'd have to have managers come out and play. This is the crack. 13 guys that were out. Grizz lose 131-115 in Milwaukee. What do I tell you about statistics? Be careful when you view them because there's going to be 100 points scored in an NBA game at least, right? Last night, Ryan Rapair. He's a two-way guy, right? They gave him a two-way guy. He was originally here, like you think, on a 10-day, and then they gave him a two-way. I'm pretty sure that's the case. He scored 33 points. He had a triple-double, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. His first, pretty good for a guy who's a two-way guy, a triple-double with 30. So tonight they play at FedEx Forum. I want to say tonight, it's Cleveland, right? They're going to play Cleveland tonight.
Last home game, too.
That's what I was going to say. It's the last home game of the year. The last game that I saw on TV from FedEx Forum, so that was what, like Friday? I think it was Friday. Like the place was empty. Now, I joined the game in progress, so they were already out of it, but man, it was a ghost town. Crazy. Just terrible year. Last one. Tonight at home, they're 25-53. That's about as bleak as you can get. The Masters begins this week. We'll begin our Pick'em contest on Wednesday. Today, making his debut for his 40th year, maybe, Ted Butler joins us. We'll talk Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson. Who's the favorite? Do you think, Landon, it's Scottie Scheffler? Do you think it could be Bryson DeChambeau? Could it be John Rahm? Could it be Xander Schauffele, or could Rory get another one? Cam Young is the money leader this year. Patrick Reed, here's my dark horse guy. I don't know if he's a dark horse, but Ludvig Åberg, who's played fairly well this year. All those are possibilities. We'll also talk who should be Ryder Cup captain. All that coming with Ted Butler. Who do you like?
I don't think Ludvig is ready for a Masters win just yet.
Okay.
I don't think so, because I think, especially what we saw a few weeks ago of just completely blowing it on Sunday, he had it in the bag, not very good. So I don't think Ludvig's ready. I don't know if Rory goes back-to-back. I feel like you can never go wrong betting on Scotty. I feel like it's his to lose right now. But I don't know. Cam Young looks good, and Bryson DeChambeau is a really good player.
Oh, yeah.
I would say my two favorites would be Scheffler and DeChambeau.
So DeChambeau almost got it last year, if you'll recall.
He did.
He was in the hunt, got beat by Rory. Scotty's in a bit of a slump. And you know what I think it is? I think it's adjusting to real life with two kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, the most of the time when players start having children, there is a slump period. Even Jack Nicklaus had that. He talked about it. I remember when Tiger Woods was on his original incredible streak, Jack Nicklaus making the comment, yes, but right now he's just singularly focused. Wait till he has a family. Mm-hmm. Then we'll see what happens. And, of course, we saw a lot of different things with Tiger Woods that happened. But I do think that might be the case with Scottie Scheffler. So we talk a whole bunch of golf as we bring back our golf guru, the guy that's been teaching golf for over 50 years in Memphis. So many of the Memphis pros that made the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour or major college for the girls, like Rachel Heck, they all began with Ted Butler. And it's always a joy to bring him back in. So he makes his debut today. So that sets the scene. And, you know, on Mondays, we do a thing called Precious Metals. We get to them in a second as we sit in the Family Leisure studio. Don't forget, we do have a chemical sale coming up. But right now, as far as I know, and I haven't heard any different from Lindsay or Billy, the floor model sale continues. Deep discounts. They still have in stock on the floor models in hot tubs, in swim spas, and cold plunges. So if you would like to really cash in on any of those, I'd get over there because they still have floor models with deep discounts, so deep I can't even tell you how much they are. But you can find out if you get to I-40 and Wooden Road. And this portion of the show is also brought to you by the commissary, Germantown Commissary, Collierville Commissary. They're the place to go for Q. You guys said it in the little tournament that they had a year ago. Now they got a buffet at Collierville that is all world, too. That even adds to the beauty. But it was all about the quality. Germantown Commissary, as voted by you guys over every single barbecue place in Memphis, was number one. And it's still that way. And again, I mentioned that buffet for under $16. You get three proteins. There's always going to be pork and chicken. You get five side dishes, salad, a drink, $15.95 in that palace right there at Poplar and Houston Levee Road. That's the commissary, both places. It's always special at the commissary. Here come medals. I got a bunch. I'm going to start with Kendrick Davis getting a bronze medal. Kendrick Davis, you may ask, the former Tiger point guard. His Sydney team, the Kings, in Australia, beat Adelaide in overtime. It was Game 5, best of 5 series for the NBL title. KD scored 35 points, had 14 assists in front of an NBL, that's National Basketball League for Australia and New Zealand, a record crowd of 18,859. Almost 19,000 in the place for this championship. He was the MVP. His team's all nestled in now with crowns on their head. It's his first professional championship. He didn't start with that team in Sydney. He was with another team. He had a little disagreement with them somehow at the end of last year, signed with this team. They won. He said, I'll be back if he doesn't get signed by an NBA team. He almost made the Portland team a year ago. Bronze medal, J.J. Spawn wins the Valero in San Antonio. That was a weird tournament because much of the third round got wiped out. It started off beautifully in sunshine. Then there was rain the whole time. It was cold as could be. They were wearing stocking caps yesterday instead of regular hats. And Spawn had to come from behind to beat Robert McNamara and win the title. It is his third title. Of course, you know, he won in Memphis a couple of years ago. But J.J. has been in a bad stretch. He couldn't putt. He was still hitting irons in his driver pretty well, just could not putt. Found the putting stroke in San Antonio, title number 3. I am going to give silver medals to the Detroit Pistons. They clinched the Eastern Conference title. They do it without Cade Cunningham, which is quite impressive. And I'm going to give the Western Conference of the NBA a silver medal for depth. when all is said and done, five teams will have 50 wins. A sixth team with four games to go has 46 W's, could win 50 games. Six teams in one conference could be 50-game winners. That, to me, is quite impressive. And along those lines, Nikola Jokic gets a silver medal from me. Last night in a thrilling overtime game, could be the Western Conference Championship Series for all we know. Jokic had 40 points, 13 assists, 8 rebounds, 3 blocks, 0 turnovers, hit the game winner over Victor Wembanyama in overtime for the Nuggets to beat San Antonio. It snapped the Spurs' 11-game win streak. That line, 40 points, 13 assists, 8 rebounds, 3 blocks, 0 turnovers. The 40, 10 assists, 3 blocks. Only one other human has done that since they started tracking blocks. That's Dwayne Wade with Miami. By the way, it's the seventh time in his career he's had 30 points, 10 assists without a turnover. Zero. That's a big guy who passes a lot. Zero turnovers. Yeah. It's the seventh time he's had that line. That's incredible. So he gets a silver medal. I give a gold medal, of course, to the UCLA women. They win for the first time in the NCAA era, because you got to go back to 1978, the last time UCLA won a championship, AIAW. It was the NCAA's competitor for a little bit. It was the first real women's league at the collegiate level. Ann Drysdale, she wasn't Ann Drysdale then. I can't remember her maiden name. But she was on that team in 78. That was the last time UCLA women won a championship. For the longtime coach, Corey Close, she's in her 15th year as the head coach. She was an assistant at UCLA, not in 1978. But she got to know John Wooden. Wooden helped make her what she is today. She referenced John Wooden in her speech. The thing that struck me is this was a total team effort. I know their 6'7 center, Lauren Betts, was the MVP. Mm-hmm. Easily, Gabriela Jaquez could have been the MVP. She, I thought, was the best player on the floor yesterday. Six seniors, they all scored all the points. No junior, no sophomore, no freshman, a part of this team that scored a point in the Final Four or the championship game. Every point scored by a senior. Six of them, I think, were close to double digits yesterday. This was
absolutely... I think all of them except one.
Is that right?
Double digits, yeah.
Incredible. Just incredible team play. So they get their first championship in the NCAA era. And final gold medal. And this is incredible for mankind. This is not sports. This is the lunar mission of Artemis II. Mm-hmm. Remember I talked about 24,000 miles an hour to get out of orbit?
Mm-hmm.
They are going today, maybe at some point during the show, to the other side of the moon. Also known, I'm going Pink Floyd here on you. I don't know if you know who Pink Floyd
is. I'm very familiar with Pink Floyd.
Dark Side of the Moon. No one's ever seen this. In fact, they're going, what was it? I think it's 4,000 miles further than any human being has ever been away from Earth. But by the way, the space station is 250 miles away. They're going 250,000 miles away. That's incredible. So Artemis 2 is going to the dark side of the moon today. They got a gold from me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to get started with a bronze medal going to the Mavericks and Lakers game that absolutely delivered on both sides of the ball. Before coming into that game, Cooper Flagg became the ninth rookie of all time to have 50 points in a game, and he continued his scoring ways in this game against the Lakers. 45 points, 8 rebounds, and 9 assists. And LeBron on the other side, we know that the Lakers right now are riddled with injury at probably the worst time in the season to be able to do so. They actually are going to get a rest from me later. But LeBron with a 30-point game, 9 rebounds, 15 assists. It was also the first game in NBA history in which a teenager and a 40-plus-year-old scored 20 or more points in a game.
Wow.
Very, very interesting stat line there. I would have never guessed that. Also, to something that you mentioned, a bronze medal for me, was the battle of MVP favorites between Jokic and Wemby. Jokic with 40 points, 8 rebounds, 13 assists. Wemby on the other side with 34 points, 18 rebounds, and 7 assists. I mean, great, great basketball game. Great, great those, matchup between those two guys.
I guess you've got to throw in SGA, but those are the two, I think, real...
Real contenders.
Real contenders for the MVP.
I really like what I'm seeing out of those two guys. Also, a bronze medal for me over the weekend in college basketball. We had the Division III National Championship that came down to a buzzer beater for Mary Washington to win their first ever national championship in school history.
Oh, so that beat Emory.
Yeah, beat Emory.
I know the Rhodes played at Emory in that tournament. They were holding that regional there. I don't think they faced Emory, though, in that.
I don't recall.
Obviously, Emory won that region.
Yeah, yeah. But if you looked at how the buzzer beater went down, it was I think the guy tripped over himself and like fell backwards and just threw the ball
up in
the air.
I haven't seen.
And then his player caught it and banked it off the glass and went in. So I call it a fancy way of passing to get it into the hoop. But regardless, Mary Washington, first ever Division III national championships for them. Congratulations
to
them.
They're not from Hawaii, are they?
No. Mary Washington's is their own thing. No Hawaii medals today. Silver medal, I'm mentioning it here, and then they're going to get a gold for me later on. But just a huge shout-out to South Carolina, making a huge statement win over favored UConn, who had not lost a game up until that point, and then on the other side of the ball.
Well, I got a medal for that, for sure.
Yeah, and then UCLA women's to make it to the national championship. I mean, the stage was set, and the game absolutely delivered in that game as getting a gold medal for me. Silver medal to the stage being set for the NCAA tournament championship tonight. Obviously, I would say the left side of the bracket with Illinois and UConn. A lot crazier, a little bit chalkier on the right side of the bracket, but Michigan this year has had a dominant journey to the top, beating every single opponent by double digits and beating a good Arizona team by 18. They look good. But Dan Hurley is also undefeated in national championship games. So
he's not. UConn, when they make it to a final, and that's with Jim Calhoun, Kevin Ollie, and Bobby Hurley. 6 times they've been to the title game, 6 times they've won. They're 6-0.
It's going to be a good...
They're due to lose.
Yeah.
They're due to lose.
It's going to be a good matchup. I'm excited for it. A gold medal for me, I was a little bit afraid that this might be a little bit too high, but honestly, I don't really care. Joe Adell's 3 home run robbery in a single game for the Angels.
Incredible.
Unbelievable performance. I don't think it's always exciting to see an outfielder get a robbed home run at any point in the game. It's an incredible feat. But for it to happen on 3 separate occasions and for him to capitalize all 3 times.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
I haven't heard of it.
3 times in one game.
3 times in one game is absolutely incredible. So a big gold medal for me for his performance.
What an athlete
there.
He is, huh?
Yeah. And the pictures that were taken of him standing in the crowd, jumping up over the bear. I mean, incredible performance.
What an athlete.
Absolutely. And then, obviously, my last gold medal going to UCLA women's basketball team, capturing their first ever national championship with a win over South Carolina, where sisters Lauren and Sieta Betts won a championship together. And, of course, Lauren Betts being surprised with MOP honors. I mean, just an incredible performance for UCLA women's.
Just a great team. Really a joy to watch that team, honestly. All right, so now it's time for the opposite end of the spectrum, the Rust Medals. Tulsa blew it in the NIT title game with Auburn. They came from behind by 21 points. They had a 5-point lead. All they had to do, they were up 3, was inbound the basketball. Inbound the basketball. And they had a timeout in their pocket. They didn't. A 3 was hit. They lose in overtime. A rust to the Golden Hurricane. A rust to the L.A. Lakers. Not really a rust. More like a tear.
Yeah.
I just can't believe you could lose for the rest of the regular season your top 2 players in Luka and in Austin Reeves. That's just incredible. So they're going to slip. This is going to allow Denver to get the 3rd spot for sure. I don't know how far L.A. slips. And I hope that Luka and that Austin Reeves can play in the postseason. They say they're going to, but that doesn't mean they're going to be healthy. And, you saw Luke is going to Europe to try to get treatment on this thing. So usually a hamstring issue like that, a grade two, is at least a month. So we shall see. And then my final rust goes to Gino Auriemma, who is clearly the greatest women's basketball coach by record and by achievement of all time.
Yeah.
25 Final Fours, 12 national championships. In this Final Four, his team, heavily favored, had won, 38 games, 54 games in a row, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Some long streak. I think it was 54. He loses the game, and he loses his mind. First off, he was peeved because Dawn Staley, the South Carolina coach, did not meet him at half court for the, by protocol, he says, pregame chat. They'd already shaken hands when they both came onto the floor. She apparently wasn't aware of the protocol. But he stood there, and they got video of him standing there for, I don't know, he said 3 minutes. I don't think it was that long, but he stood there. Then he was misinformed. He thought, because in the third quarter, his team, and South Carolina's a very physical basketball team, his team got six fouls, they got zero. And they fell behind significantly in that third quarter. They could not make it back up. But he felt that his star had gotten her shirt, Sarah Foster is her name, had gotten her shirt ripped. Well, ESPN had a video of her ripping the shirt when she missed a short shot. We don't know if it had been slightly torn before that, but we know she ripped it apart. So he was misinformed there. Then at the end of that third quarter with the 6-0 deficit in fouls, he goes on national TV with Holly Rowe and basically cusses, calls out Staley for being the worst human being on earth to referees, where he's like laid back, like he doesn't work referees. It was a bad look, so bad that he had to issue an apology through Connecticut's media and social media. Then Rebecca Lobo, his former player, said that he had contacted Dawn Staley. She said, I didn't get a call from him. Maybe he texted me. I got 800 texts. I haven't seen them all. But he certainly didn't talk to me. So Gino, who clearly is a great coach, got to wonder about him. That's a bad look for a guy who, real good winner, not such a good loser.
Sore loser is the best way to is the best way to phrase that. My rust is the same as well for the Lakers team. At this point in the season, suffering two critical injuries to their top two scoring guys, Luka, and now Austin Reeves with a left oblique muscle injury, going to be out for quite some time, I think. And I mean, LeBron did step up in their most recent game, but you can't have just LeBron at this stage in his career be your main guy, be the guy that's going to take you all the way to the top. And while we're on the Lakers, I saw this stat as well. I'm going to give a rust to it as well because, I mean, it's just I don't really know what to make of it. I saw a stat during an NBA game where they were sharing the most combined points shared by a father-son duo in the NBA. And second place is Dell and Steph Curry with a combined 38,896 points. First place is LeBron and Bronny. Bronny has contributed 91 points to the 42,692 total.
One-sided there.
I guess, sure. Yeah. I guess that counts. I don't know.
I would think, though, the medal for stats for this week is 13 players on a roster didn't play.
Yes.
Couldn't play.
Right.
That's incredible.
Interesting stuff.
Those are our medals. They're brought to you by Landers Cadillac of Memphis. The wait, as we mentioned, is over. They worked on that showroom for a long time, and it's beautiful in there. And, of course, the Cadillacs are beautiful. All the new Cadillacs are in. You know you're going to get the best price. We start with the trade-ins. You always get top dollar for a trade-in at Landers Cadillac of Memphis, and you can see how much you can save with the Landers Easy Pass at CadillacofMemphis.com. They do have all the new models, but you remember, they sell fast. So go see this place. Go talk to the folks. See what deals you can make. And remember, if it doesn't say Landers, you paid too much. We take the break. We're headed to Indy. Mike DeCourcy is standing by. The lead college basketball writer for the Sporting News joins us here in just a minute.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. It's the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
We're piloting to Indy momentarily. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News about to join us. He is brought to you by Memphis Tourism and the Memphis Sports Council, with over $4 billion in spending by visitors to Memphis and Shelby County. Did you know those traveling to our community each year support the 2,000-plus businesses that make up the local tourism and hospitality industry? Whether they're here for a convention, sporting event, or the blues, soul, rock and roll, great food, Memphis is famous for tourism and hospitality, and it meets the needs of the 12 million annual visitors. Memphis Tourism and the Memphis Sports Council are a winning combination, working year-round to bring visitors and sporting events to our community that help fan the flames of economic development right here in our city and in Shelby County. They bring you Mike DeCourcy every week. Were you surprised, Mr. DeCourcy, at the ease with which UConn and Michigan were winners in the Final Four? Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. I was surprised absolutely by UConn for the reasoning that they had not played well at all in March. Maybe it was getting to April that mattered. Maybe that was the key. Because you look back on their March performance, it starts, more or less, it starts with a visit to Marquette to play an 11-win team. And they didn't just, like, get beat. They didn't just lose. They got pretty well handled and never really made a great effort to get back in a game that they should have won easily. And then they get into the Big East Tournament Final, and they get blitzed by St. John's by 20 points, never made a real run at winning the game. And so then they get into the NCAA Tournament, and they're squeezing by teams. And certainly they did a good job of making Michigan State play poorly. This has been a terrific defensive team at UConn, but Solo Ball wasn't scoring, and Silas Demery wasn't scoring and wasn't creating a lot. Now he had an injury, so he had an excuse. Braylon Mullins, their freshman, who's so talented, basically hadn't made a shot since he left Greenfield, Indiana. And then he makes that. Demery makes two in the last few minutes against Duke, and Caravan makes one. And then, of course, they get into position to make that big shot against Duke to win it, and everything sort of seemed to change because they got here and all those shots that weren't going in for Ball all of a sudden started to drop. And you saw early on, one of the things that I laughed about at myself was that I thought Andre Stojakovic had been doing a phenomenal defensive job for Illinois in this tournament, and I thought he was ideally suited to guard Braylon Mullins. But I forgot that the way the Illinois rotation goes is that they start with Jake Davis, who had a very fine season, but he's not the defender that Stojakovic is. And here comes Mullins saying, okay, I better feast while I can. And he did. He hit two threes in the first couple of possessions, and he built some confidence. And so when Stojakovic came in, it didn't make quite as much of a difference. And you had Mullins playing great as well. So everything went the way UConn needed it to go, and they made a lot of their own luck with players making plays they hadn't made in a while.
The next game, Michigan-Arizona, we all thought was going to be for the national championship. I certainly thought Arizona was the best team I had seen, and Michigan dominated from the very beginning. I think it was, 9-1 right off the bat or something of that nature.
Yeah.
I just was astounded. Pete looked like a freshman. They just could not stop that machine. That big center inside is so good. It was scary. I think Michigan's the favorite tonight, but nothing would surprise me.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that was problematic was that Arizona seemed not to have watched tape on Michigan. And I know they did, but what I'm saying is that if you watched two tapes from Michigan games this year, you needed to see two tapes. One, you needed to see the Elite Eight game against Tennessee. Let them get going. See what happens to you. Tennessee was unable because their offense wasn't proficient enough, and that was always a problem for that team. But they were unable to slow down the Wolverines, and they just got absolutely trucked. And Duke said, we're not running with you guys. We've seen the tape. We're not crazy. All the way back in mid-February, and the game was in the 50s. I don't remember what the final score was, but it was a 50-ish game. Maybe Duke got into the 60s when they won it. I don't remember. But that's what you wanted to do, something like that if you're Arizona. And it was there, obvious from the first few possessions that they thought, no, we're good. We can do what we do. No, man, you got to do what works. And in that game, you had to emphasize the fact that you had better guard play. Braden Burries and Jaden Bradley are better than the two they were going against. And they didn't emphasize that. They just played. And that was a big mistake. It's not a three-point shooting team because they've been able to dominate inside against so many teams, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But you weren't doing that against these guys. At the best, you were going to play to a standstill and let your guards win it, but that's not the game plan they carried in, and they left early.
It's hard to beat Mara inside, but that is for sure. Tonight, Solo Ball apparently is going to go. Yaxel Lindberg is going to go. Yaxel is amazing. He only played 15 minutes. He looked like, what did Dusty May say? He looked like a 38-year-old good shooter at the Y.
Yeah, that's what he said.
And he had 11 points, 3 rebounds, hobbled in 15 minutes. That was pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, a lot of what he did early in the game when he still was himself really mattered. I mean, that's what established them as the dominant team. It's funny because I was saying to someone who was making the case that they played really well when Yaxel was hurt, and the point I made was that before he got hurt, the game was over. I mean, I think it was one of my editors, and he said, "Yeah, but they were only up 5," and I was like, "Man, I was there. Yeah. That game was over." Like you get this feeling when you're in the building, especially at this level. Like, I remember the Gonzaga-Baylor game in 2021 in the COVID bubble thing. And there was a shot that the terrific wing for Gonzaga, the All-American, his name I'm forgetting now. But he had a shot.
Adam Morrison?
No, this was 2021.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
15 years after Adam. But they had an All-America shooting guard, small forward type, who had to have a great game for them to beat Baylor. And he had a wide open shot, a wide open three, about 4.5 minutes into the game. And I said, okay, if this ball doesn't go in, the game is over. Because like, they weren't going to be able to manufacture enough points if that guy didn't get it going fast. And they ended up losing by 18 or whatever. And that was the feeling that you had in that building on Saturday, that Michigan had already seized control of the game. They were not going to yield it no matter what happened. And even an injury to their essential player didn't make a difference at that point. They had everything they needed to win the game, except the transaction of the final 22 minutes or whatever.
Well, we'll see if Ball and Yaxel, you know, what percentage they are of themselves. You also wrote an interesting story about Terrace Reed, who was with Michigan, and now he's the main man inside for UConn, and he has been great in these NCAA games. Give me a little sense of that story and why he left Dusty May in Michigan.
Well, don't forget, he technically didn't leave Dusty. He
left Juwan Howard?
Juwan was fired, and like they finished their season. It was one of the worst seasons in Michigan history, 8-24. So Juwan is fired, and then Terrace sits for a few days with it and says, okay, I'm just going to enter the portal and see what happens. And so he's already in the portal by the time they hire Dusty. And Dusty comes in, and it's pretty well known. I don't think the actual transaction had happened, but it's pretty well established that he's bringing Vlad Goldin with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so Terrace is like, and Terrace didn't have this resume now. So Vlad had played on a Final Four team and then on a terrific team the following year that didn't go as far. You got Terrace coming off 8-24. He certainly is a talented guy, but he didn't have a great resume to sell. So he looked at it and said, I know you're bringing Vlad. How will it go?" And Dusty said, "You know, we will try to make it work." And at that point, he said, "You know what? There's somebody out there that needs me, and I'm not a luxury." And he found it in UConn. And it's interesting because he was very open yesterday about how hard the first year was. They're coming off two titles. At that point, the expectation and the standard is really high, and he was coming off not the great success. He'd never played in March. He'd basically been on one average team that I think finished 18-16 and one awful team. And so he didn't really know 100% what went into being a UConn Husky, and he found out. And by the end of the year, when the season was over after they nearly beat Florida in the second round but didn't quite, he was seriously thinking about whether he needed to move again. And then he's a really bright kid, and he talked about how he was writing in his journal, and ultimately he came to the conclusion that if he really wants to be a pro, you can't run from that challenge. And smart move, because now not only did he improve to the level that we've seen over the course of the last month, the month and a half, but he's also playing in the national championship game against two of his former teammates, Namari Burnett and Will Cheddar. Both were on the Michigan team that they struggled through in 2024.
Usually, contrasting styles present themselves in these championship games. Two different styles of coaches, Danny Hurley, Dusty May, kind of contrast both the teams and the coaches.
Well, the coaches, I mean, Dusty doesn't say a lot that's obvious. You know, what he might be whispering to referees when they go by, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Dan is one of the more demonstrative people relative to that. It can be annoying. I mean, I thought in 2024, when they had one of the great college teams of all time, and he was an integral part of that, obviously, that it was borderline insufferable. Like, you're already winning by 20 and you're still mad. Like, at that point, it's like, come on, you're crushing these teams. Do you really need to beg for a call? I think at that point it was bad. And I think that he realized that. And although it may not seem like it, he really has toned it down since the 2023-2024. He's much more relaxed, if you want to use that word, on the sidelines. Dusty is much more buttoned up, much more analytical. Not to say that Dan's not really intelligent, but there's a lot of old school coach in him. His father was one of the great basketball coaches of all time, coached in high school, but still, when you're talking about the great coaches who've ever coached, and you think Phil Jackson and John Wooden and Mike Krzyzewski, and like Bob Hurley Sr.'s name belongs in the sentence somewhere. It may be after a few commas.
Right.
But he belongs in there. And so he was a very demanding coach, really tough, but very caring. And I think that's what you see with Dan as well. Dusty is new age. One of the interesting things I found yesterday, I wrote another piece about Michigan's legacy, their history. And like even on Saturday, like it was all about the Fab Five being there together, doing the Altcast on one of the networks for the
right.
The broadcast.
Yeah.
And it's like 3 years before they showed up, 2 years before they showed up, Michigan won a title. And like, how many people even know more than one name of the team that won the title? But those guys get all this glory. It's like, well, do they want to be the Fab Five and be celebrated 20 years from now because of their taste in fashion and music and clothes and all that?
Right.
Or do they want to be the 89 team that actually won it? I thought that was supposed to be the goal.
They did change the way we wear uniforms and black socks, part of that is the culture. I don't blame them for being proud, but I do think it's the Michigan folks that ought to be going, wait a second, that was a good team, but you got to win. I've heard people go, this is going to be the greatest team of all time of Michigan will be if they win it, never referring to the team that won it over the Fab Five. So that really is incredible. Okay, we're almost out of time. I got a million things to talk about, but I will do that next week. But I've got to get with you because I'm not happy with your all USA team. Third team, MJ? Oh my gosh.
Come on. This is not MJ of the Bulls, pal. MJ of Carolina, who, yes, won a title when he was a freshman and the third option on a great team, and then did put back two back-to-back tremendous years, but you look at Patrick Ewing made three title games. He was on the second team. Pete Maravich scored more points in 3 years than anyone has in five. Antoine Davis went 5 years trying to catch that record and couldn't get there. That's how amazing Maravich was.
Save that for next week because you're going to tell me who wins this game tonight.
I say Michigan has to win. UConn will give them a game. They'll have a great plan. But if Yaxel Lindeborg is close to who he is, they win. If he's not close, gosh, I mean, it's gonna get scary for the Wolverine.
Everybody is going, you know, UConn hasn't lost the title game. They're 6-0 through Calhoun and Ollie and Hurley. I go, you know what? You can't stay perfect forever. I'm with you. Michigan's winning this game. Thank you, my friend. As always, we'll talk next Monday.
Thanks, Dave.
That is Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. He's brought to you in part by Southern Security. Oh, yeah. Southern Security is a credit union, not for profit. They can do things banks can't. And I ask you, are you getting the lowest possible rate on your mortgage? At Southern, they'll offer low rates, flexible terms, no PMI, unbeatable service. You can refinance your current mortgage with the Mid-South's best mortgage lender so easily by going to southernsecurity.org or talking to a human being at 901-452-7900. Southern Security is an equal housing lender, federally insured by NCUA. They're your team, Southern Security, your home team, credit union. Back in a minute. We're going to summer, and I don't even know what the cross street is. It's Putt-Putt, and it's Ted Butler, and he's right around the corner.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
We're heading to Putt-Putt in a moment. We talk golf with Ted Butler every week. He's brought to you in part by Memphis Public Golf. If I told you about this brand new TriStar tournament at Pine Hill 12 days from now, that will be on the 18th. It's a Saturday. You're going to have an 18-hole but different format every six holes. The first one through six are a scramble, 7 through 12 alternate shot. That makes for some good friendship, huh? And then the aggregate, both scores will count from 13 to 18. It's different, and it's going to be fun. They're going to have a championship for every single golf course. Every single golf course is in great shape. They're about to break ground on the new clubhouse at Audubon. And by the way, you wouldn't believe what a great driving range they are. Just enjoying at Audubon. What did Mickey said? Like 1,500 buckets a week or something crazy like that. Anyway, Memphis Public Golf, they knew it was an amenity. Mickey Barker seized that opportunity. They've made Memphis Public Golf great. Speaking of great, the greatest teacher there is in Memphis. He's taught them all. That would be Ted Butler. Ted, do you know how many years this is that you have been on Sports 56 with golf analysis?
Either 33 or 34.
I knew it was in the 30s. I thought it might have even been in the 40s. How long have you been teaching?
56 years.
Yeah, 56 years, right on the station number. I like that.
Yes.
All right. We also know, besides being a great teacher, you've been a great Tiger lover. Give me your sense of this latest fiasco.
Well, I don't know how he's put up with the pain for the last 15 years. You know, 2008, he won the U.S. Open on his knees, and he's been in pain ever since. He's been in 15 operations, whatever. How he's dealt with this all this time, I have no earthly idea. He shouldn't have been driving impaired. Maybe he didn't even know he was, but he should have been anyway. And I hope he can go overseas, whatever they're going to do, and help him with that if it is an addiction. There's a lot of people not been behind the wheel that shouldn't have over the years, but when he does it, it's global. And, you know, he saved golf, and he's doing so many things for children with his TGR Foundation. He's just he's a great person, and this is an unfortunate thing, and I wish it hadn't happened, but I hope he gets better and comes back.
I hope he does too. I think, you know, how serious this is. This guy was impaired like that on his way to practice. It wasn't like he had practiced for 4 hours. He's in pain. He's going to pop a couple and drive home just to alleviate the pain. But this was on his way to practice. So he didn't look healthy to me at the TGL Championship when he finally played. His face doesn't look right. I think the guy needs help, and I hope he does get it so that he can enjoy the rest of his life, whether that is in the limelight, helping in golf, or whether that's just to enjoy his kids. I hope he gets better.
And this stuff he's done with the tour, you know, putting the tour back together.
Right.
You know, the worldwide tour now. He's been number one on that. The things he has done for golf are just incredible. And I, for one, hope he gets better and comes back.
Me too. All right, now you got Phil Mickelson, too. Health problems within the family. They're never specific as to what that is all about. It's not him. We know that because he did play a couple of LIV tournaments, or at least one that I know of. He's not coming to Augusta. It'll be the first time since 94 that Mickelson or Woods are not at the Masters. We are seeing an end of an era here.
Yep. Now, I don't know what's in the family. I think there was cancer involved sometime. Somebody, his wife. I don't really know.
His wife did have. She had some form of cancer.
Yeah, I don't know what it is now, though. There's been no publicity on that. But you know, Phil's not much of a fan favorite anymore, anyway. So
no, his move to the LIV sunk his legacy. He must have needed money, is all I can think of, because. You know, he destroyed his legacy. He would have become NBC's top analyst or CBS's top analyst. He would have become one of the great analysts, I think.
Yep.
He'd have been a Ryder Cup captain. There's a lot of things that were in the offing for him, and he blew that. All right, let's get to the Augusta National and the first major of the year. It's our favorite because we love the Masters. There's no question about that. Scottie Scheffler is in a slump. Is he your favorite? Is Rory your favorite, who finally won one? DeChambeau, who's the most electric golfer on the world right now, but still playing in LIV and did not come back when he had a chance. Who do you think is the favorite to win at Augusta?
Well, there's probably lots of favorites, but I'm picking the same guy I picked last year, which would be Rory.
Really?
He's been out there all week. He's out there walking around that green jacket. He is happy. The monkey's off his back. He was all around the chip and putt contest the other day, watching the kids play, and he's smiling. He's in a good frame of mind. And I don't know what's wrong with Scotty. I mean, you just can't play good every single week. You know, maybe he's been resting up for it. I don't know, but.
He still makes top 25. He still makes cuts.
Oh, yeah.
But he's really struggled with his driver quite a bit. I mean, he's hitting a cut shot when he's, you know, just trying to hit the ball pretty straight, and he's lost control of it. I don't know. I go back. I said this earlier in the program. I go back to what Jack Nicklaus said about how life changes when you start having kids. And, you know, he's got a second, and it's either here or very close to here, and I think that's affected his golf. I do. I think having a family, changing your priorities, that changes everything.
I can, from my own experience playing the mini tours back a long time ago, it is. I can tell you it does. It changes your priorities on everything. You know, you got dual responsibilities, and you go away, and you feel bad for going away, and it's a hard thing to balance.
DeChambeau, it's hard for me not to think he couldn't. He can't win this thing.
Well, he could. He just at some point in time in every term he gets going sideways, and sometimes he recovers, and sometimes he can't. If he's on, he'd be awfully hard to beat. You know, as far as he can hit it out there, he's short irons in all those par fours and reaching par fives easily if he, you know, keeps his composure and not worried about blaming his clubs for stuff.
Like
he always does.
Your sense of Jon Rahm, who off the DP World Tour because he doesn't want to pay fines. I think all his Ryder Cup teammates are upset with him over that. I don't know where his head's at. I don't see him winning, but where do you put him?
Well, I would say a contender for sure. He is a great golfer. There's no question about that, but the priorities of whatever the fines are, or I don't know, when you get multimillionaire like he is and not playing for history like Koepka, you know, you got to admire him for coming back.
I do.
Because he wants to be in the history books. you know, he wants to play against the really good players all the time. I think Rahm and those guys don't.
Xander Schauffele, where do you put him?
He would be in my top five for sure. I mean, he's really playing good golf, and he had a slump last year, but he's back right now. He would be in a top five pick for sure.
How about the winner of the players, the guy that's atop the money leaderboard, Cam Young?
Cameron. Yeah, well, there's no telling. You know, there's so many out there right now that if, you know, one guy gets hot, and Cameron with his power, good grief.
Two European guys I'd like to see, either Oberg or Fleetwood. Either of them have a chance?
Yes, absolutely. If Oberg could finish a tournament, he'd have won two already this year. He would have won the Players if he and hit those two terrible tee shots. And Fleetwood is playing good every week. It's so global now. There's so many good players, and one of them gets hot. You know, there's just a bunch of them can win.
But you're going with Rory. All right.
I'm picking Rory.
Last
question. Gut feeling.
We got 1 minute. Yeah. Who would you now pick, since Tiger's no longer going to be it? Who would be the Ted Butler Ryder Cup captain?
I never thought about that. I'll have to think about that one.
All right.
I wasn't ready for that one.
All right, I'll let you think about it. I'll just give you my name. My name for sure, Steve Stricker, sure. The last guy to win.
Well, okay.
Now, you think about it. I'll ask you next week, and next week we'll also do a little spring lesson. That's our man, Ted Butler. Thank you, Ted. So good to have you back.
Thank you, Dave. All right.
Ted Butler over at Putt-Putt. He's brought to you by Sheldon. You know, Sheldon could go and get some help from Ted Butler because he's the worst golfer in the world. But he's really like a point guard when it comes to real estate because that's all he does. 24/7, 365, he perfects that strategic marketing program that gets houses sold so fast. It's getting to the closing table. That's the key. That's the guy that gets you there. He prices your home perfectly. He's seen everything in all the years that he's been around. He'll three-putt. He sprays the ball. He needs Ted Butler's help, but he doesn't have the time because he's selling houses for you. How do you get him? You go to memphisrelocate.com. See the great comments on his social media. They love him. And then call him. It's so simple. 483-0546. He answers every time, 24/7. That's memphisrelocate.com or 483-0546. You want to sell your home? That's the number to call. That'll do it for us. Johnny Radio's right around the corner. We got the usual culprits that come your way tomorrow. We'll see you then.